Okay, good afternoon. We are continuing in our class, Eretz Yisrael, the Talmud, and Rav Kook. If you have the handout, if you look on what is Brachot Lamed Vav Amud Bet, 36b, I think this is the ninth class, the Ashirat Shi, right? So we're on Lamed Vav Amud Bet. Just as the page in the Gemara is becoming wide. So there's an interesting discussion that the Talmud is having there about what bracha to make on different foods. So as we know, bread, we make the bracha motzi lechem min haaretz. For wine, we make borei pri hagafen. Those are the only two examples where we have a specific bracha for a specific food. The rest is all categories. So we have borei pri haaretz, for anything that grows from a tree. Borei pri ha'adama, from something that grows from the ground. And then we have, for everything else that's not included in that, we make a general bracha, she'akol nia bedvaro, that God made everything. That's the bracha you make on eggs and meat and water and salt, whatever. So the Talmud is discussing what bracha you make on what bracha you make on palpalin. Right? So palpalin is pepper. Right? So what bracha do we make on palpalin? Rav Sheshet Amar, Rav Sheshet says, Shehakol, you make the bracha, the general bracha, Shehakol niya bidvaro, and the assumption is that anything that is not a fruit of the tree or comes from the ground, so you would make a shehakol. The problem is, as you know, that pepper does grow from the ground. So we'll have to see about that. Rava Amar, Rava says, lo klum. When somebody eats just pepper on its own, there's no bracha to make. Continues the Talmud and says, Va'azda Rava letamei. That Rava goes according to his position. Meaning this idea that Rava says, that before you eat pepper, you don't make a bracha, this is Rava being consistent with his regular position. The Amar Rava, because Rava said, Kas, palpale, b'yome de kipure patur. If someone would chew on pepper on Yom Kippur, that would not be considered eating, and that person would be patur. Because eating pepper on its own is not considered eating. Which is why Rava takes the position that if someone would eat pepper, that you don't make a bracha before you eat it because it's not considered eating. Obviously, if a person were to eat a piece of paper or to eat a piece of plastic, you don't make a bracha. So Rava considers in terms of the edibility of pepper, he considers it like eating, you know, a piece of wood or a stone, and you don't make a bracha. And he continues, Kas zangbila, if a person were to chew on ginger, just chew on ginger straight, but Yomi de Kippure, also patur, you would be patur. That is the position of Rava. When, forget the ginger, we're going to focus more on the pepper. So Rava says that if somebody would eat just plain pepper, they would not make a bracha, right? That's the little spice, but it comes in peppercorns. The spice is when it's already been ground. So if you would eat a peppercorn, you don't make a bracha, according to Rava. The Gemara challenges this. Meitivei. Meitivei means I'm going to bring you an older source that disagrees with this. Haya Rabbi Meir Omer. Rabbi Meir used to say, Mimashma Shenemar, it says in the Torah, Va'araltem arlato et piryo. This is referring to the prohibition that any fruit tree We are prohibited from eating the fruits the first 3 years of that tree. That's called Orla. This is true. This is not just true in Eretz Yisrael. There's actually, this rule applies even in Chutz La'aretz, even where we are, that if a person plants a tree, the first 3 years, the fruits are forbidden. But the way the Torah says it is, va'araltem arlato et piryo, the fruits should be blocked from you. It's interesting, he uses the word orla, which is also the term that's used for the brit of the baby. When we do a brit, we remove the orla, which is like the blockage. So this is also seen as like the blockage of the fruits. So if it says et piryo, says the Talmud, the verse continues etz ma'achal. Ein yodea she'etz ma'achal hu. So don't I know that it's fruits of a tree that you can eat? Elamat Talmud lomar etz ma'achal. Why does the Torah add the words etz ma'achal? Lahavi, to include etz, the tree, shetam etzo upiryo shaveh. To include this special tree that the tree and the fruit taste the same. Meaning, there is one tree which its fruits taste the same as the tree itself. So I would have thought that maybe there should be no rules of Orla for such a tree. So therefore the Torah adds, no, Eitz Ma'achal Hu, that to include even this tree where the fruits and the tree taste the same, that you still cannot eat the fruits for the first 3 years. Ve'eza hu zeh. So what is this special fruit, that a special tree, where the tree and the fruits taste the same? Zeha palpulin, that's pepper. Pepper, the tree, and the peppercorn taste the same. Lelamdecha, to teach you, sheha palpulin chayavin ba'orla, that black pepper, or really all peppers, but you know, the pepper, that is prohibited from being eaten the first 3 years. Now, that's the Talmud, speaking from a halachic perspective. Then the Talmud adds, ulalamdech, but also to teach you, she'ein eretz Yisrael chasera klum, that there's nothing missing in eretz Yisrael. Shenemar, as it says in the Torah, eretz, it's a land, ashelo b'miskenot tochal ba'lechem. It is not with in poverty that you will eat bread there. Lo techsar kolba. There is nothing missing in this land. We'll come back to that. So we have a question. How can Rava say that eating pepper is not considered food? You don't make a bracha before you eat it, and you could even eat it on Yom Kippur, and you won't have transgressed eating on Yom Kippur. And yet here we see that pepper has the same rules of Orla. For the first 3 years you can't eat it, like it's a regular fruit. Answers the Talmud, lo kasha, this is not a difficulty. Ha baratifta, ha bayaveshta. When it's fresh, and it's, so to speak, ratifta means it's moist, or it's not really wet, but it's sort of soft and more edible, then it's considered a fruit. But once it dries out, at that point it's no longer able to be eaten on its own, and you would not make a bracha, and if you ate it on Yom Kippur, you would not be liable for eating on Yom Kippur. But while it's still fresh, so you could technically eat it, so it still has the rules of Orla. That's the Talmud's discussion of pepper. And again, I'm going to show you where what Rav Kook does. This is another example of a Gemara, kind of everyone runs through, because I don't think you've ever been somewhere where in your meal they served you a piece of chicken with some green beans and a pile of peppercorns. Right? I don't think anyone here plans on eating pepper on its own. So we kind of just move on past this. But Rav Kook is going to focus on two of these points. Yes?
You say that it's peppercorn, the low line pilpil yarok, or gamba, or pilpil adom?
Oh, you're talking about bell peppers.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those are regular food. Those are not, and those don't really grow on a tree either in this way. So, yeah, I know it's the same word, and in English it's also the same word, pepper. But we're referring here to the pepper, the spice, not the vegetables, the red and green peppers. Right? Okay. I mean, it is interesting that they have the same name, but that's what the Talmud, when it discusses papulin.
And I have a question. If if pepper is permitted, let's say cinnamon or other spices are permitted on Yom Kippur?
So the word permitted is a tough word because it's not really permitted, it's just that it's not considered food. But yeah, the other foods such as cinnamon and things like that, those are actually discussed, and those are actually more of an issue. Right, those may be more like food than, in other words, if you would eat cinnamon on its own, everyone would agree you would make a bracha, because that's something that people do. They will take a cinnamon stick and, keep it in their mouth for flavor. That's different. But again, Rav Kook is going to focus not so much on the halachic discussion, which is what we do on what bracha you make on them. But these two interesting points that the Talmud points out. One is that the pepper, the tree and the fruit taste alike. What does that mean? Meaning we know what the words mean, but what does that mean about this spice? And number two, what does the Talmud mean that this teaches you somehow that Eretz Yisrael has everything? How do you see from the fact that Eretz Yisrael has pepper, how does that teach you that Eretz Yisrael has everything? Those are the two points that he's going to focus on. So let's begin. Haya Rabbi Meir Omer, Ve'aralteim arlato et pirio. The Talmud says that you're supposed to not eat the fruits of the tree the first 3 years. Eini yodea she'etz ma'achalhu, etc. L'lamdecha she'apalpalin chayavim ba'orla. Says Rav Kook like this. Yesh lefaresh, I'd like to explain like this. Shehaya ola al adat ladun betam orla. I'd like to talk about the reason for why we don't eat orla. Why don't we eat the fruits of the first 3 years? Alpi, so I'd like to explain. Divrei Chazal ba'Agadah, there's a famous teaching of our sages, Shehagzera haita, that Hashem originally decreed, Shiyatam etzo upiryo shaveh. Let me read this inside. 1 second. If you haven't heard this midrash, let me give you the verses for it. On day one, Hashem created light and dark, day and night. On day two, God separated the upper waters from the lower waters and created the atmosphere and what we have is our oceans. On day three, first the land and the water, they separate. And then, Vayomer Elohim, God said, Tadshe Haaretz, Deshe, the ground should give forth grass, Esev, which is grass, Mazria Zera, which gives forth seed, and then Eitz Pri means trees of fruit. Ose Pri Lemino, and those fruits should have seeds that can then, Asher Zarobo, ala aret. So those fruits should have their own seeds so you can continue and plant new trees. So when it came to the actual happening, it changes. It says, "Vatotze ha'aretz desha esav mrazir azar elimineu." The grass came out exactly as God had commanded, but instead of coming out eitz pri, what came out was eitz osepri. And our sages looked at these verses and understood that something happened here, something changed. So the Midrash Rabbah tells us, and Rashi quotes this in his commentary on the Chumash, that Hashem originally commanded that there be eitz pri, which is trees of fruit, where the entire tree was supposed to be edible. And you could have the fruit, which tastes like the apple, but the tree itself should taste like the apple. But the tree did not listen. It did not follow the commands of God, and instead it made eitz osepri. There were two separate things. There's the tree, which is not edible, which does not taste like the fruit. And then there is the fruit itself, which comes out from the tree. This is considered to be, so to speak, the first sin in all of creation is actually not Adam and Chava, but the first sin in creation is the trees not giving forth fruit, and not giving forth a tree that tastes like the fruit. Now, obviously, I'm sure you're very bothered by this question, because every one of the commentaries asks this question. Trees don't have free will. So trees can't sin. If God directs the trees to grow a certain way, how did the trees have the ability to deviate? The answer is that the Midrash continues to tell us that when God punished Adam and Chava for eating from the tree, there were 40 punishments that were given out, or 39. Let's just keep it simple. 10 punishments were given to Adam, Harishon, to man. 10 were given to Chava, the first woman. 10 were given to the Nachash, 10 punishments, and the Midrash lists each one of the punishments. And then 10 or 9 punishments were given to the earth. Why? Because the earth did not listen and it gave trees that don't taste like the fruit. So the way all the commentaries explain it is that actually it's retroactive. Because man was going to eat from the tree, it already retroactively affected the trees that they shouldn't be able to give forth the right fruits. That's all in the Midrash. Continues Rav Kook. So you all know the Midrash. Shagzera haita sheyatam etzo upiria shava. The original decree of God was that the trees should taste like fruit. V'ha'aret chata bezeh, and the earth sinned. V'habiur ha'pashut. And the simple understanding of this midrash is like this: Hu sheyera'ui sheteitze habria b'shefa yoter gadol lahasbia mituva et habriot. God created the earth for the purpose of providing man with his needs. That's an interesting concept, and obviously he's going to explain this later when we get to Eretz Yisrael. He's going to explain that Eretz Yisrael does this even more. But the idea is that the planet Earth that we live on was created for the sake of man, and it's created for the sake of providing for man. Ella, but, Sheha'adam ha'alul l'chet, because man has within him the potential to sin, man is inclined to sin, Eino yachol lekabel rov tova, you're unable to receive all of the good. Some of the good has to be held back from us because of our inclination to sin. Vachet muchan beteva chamro shehu mehaaretz. And because man is linked to the earth, because as we know, we are called Adam because we were taken from the Adama. So there's a connection between man and the earth. So because man is undeserving to receive all of the Tovah in this lifetime. Therefore, the earth refuses to give out all of its good. Al-Kain itgaleh bazeh, so this revealed she'ein tam ha'etz ketam ha'pri, that the tree doesn't taste like the fruit. Umimela, says Rav Kook, and accordingly, since the tree does not taste like the fruit, ein ha'pri ba lishlemut ta'amo, that is why the fruit doesn't taste like what it could taste like. What we're saying is, what Rav Kook is saying, is that the apple should be so much better than the apple. The orange should be so much better than the orange you taste. Strawberries should taste better than the strawberries. But because there's an intervention, there is a disruption between the earth and the fruit, it has to pass through the wood, the tree, and the tree has no flavor and no taste. Kiu mafig harbe ba'avur halach mi'omek ha'aretz ad apri derech ha'etz, so that dampens and weakens the flavors of the fruits. That's the way Rav Kook understands what happened here when the fruits, when the trees no longer tasted like the fruit. Masha'enken, but it wouldn't be so. Im hayagam tam ha'etz ketam apri, if the tree itself would taste like the fruit, if the apple tree tasted like an apple, hayamitchazek tam apri, then if the tree tasted like the apple, then the apple would taste even more delicious. Hayamitchazek tam apri, vayamosif hana'a livnei adam, and we would experience more pleasure from the eating of the fruits. It's interesting that scientists today are working on to try to re-engineer everything. And I haven't seen any such experiments to make trees edible. But what he's saying is that that's the way it was supposed to be. Trees were supposed to be edible. And if the trees would have been edible, the trees itself would have produced fruits much better than whatever we've ever tasted. So he says,
Uba. I have a question.
Yes.
If the trees were edible, animals won't eat them up, like goats and others, and then there won't be trees?
Well, it's a good question. I you know, human, we would eat them up. We would eat them up. But you know,
then there won't be any trees. If we eat the trees and the fruits, eventually.
Yeah, no, you're right. If we would eat the trees down to the trunk, it wouldn't grow back. We would have to eat the branches, right? And not the trunk. But the truth is, if you think about it with vegetables, you have to replant new potatoes every year. You have to replant new tomatoes every year. Right? It doesn't, you can't just leave the vine or the whatever there and let it grow back. It has to be worked on again. And you know, carrots, you have to replant carrots. So just like you have to replant carrots, you have to replant apples every year, assuming you ate the trunk. But I don't think we would eat the trunk, right?
I also have another question. What bracha would you say if you ate the tree? Because the trees on the Adama, so would you say
Borei Pri Adama? That's a really good question. If the trees tasted like, well, it would still be, it's not the Pri Ha'etz, right? It's the Eitz. So it sounds like it would be Adama, while the fruits would be Eitz. But it makes sense, because the trees, even though this is Rav Kook's opinion, right? He's saying that if the trees tasted like the fruit would taste even better. So then maybe the trees would be Borei Pri Ha'adama, but the fruits that grow from the tree would be Borei Pri Ha'etz, possibly. Right? It's a great question. Okay. So, Uba'asher, Bichlal Pri Ha'etz, included in the fruits of the tree, Heima Michlal HaMotarot, would be extra. She'efshir la'adam nitkayem mi'baladam. So, what he's saying is, clearly, right now, we have apples. And they taste okay. I like apples, I'm sure you all. I'm just using apple as the example. Everybody likes apples. If they tasted better, would it change your life? Not so much, right? Maybe you'd enjoy apples even more. But this is what we would call motarot. Motarot means an additional value to the apple. So he says, if the apples would taste even better, that would be like a bonus flavor that was taken away from the world. Amnam, however, kishah adam ole b'malot hashlemut, when a person is himself exceptionally good, if a person is deserving, if a person elevates himself, kol ha-motarot ha-marchivim et da'ato na'im lo ma'od. I want to explain this because this is such an important idea. It's a really important idea, separate from our whole discussion that we are having. You know, there's an interesting question about the concept of motarot. Now let's take an example of motarot. What he would consider motarot. Let's say there's a family of four. Let's keep it simple. A family of four. Father, mother, son, daughter. How many rooms does a family of four need?
Maybe four rooms.
Four rooms?
One for the boy, one for the girl, one for the parents, and one for guests that are coming.
You're just saying bedrooms, right? Four bedrooms, right? Two bathrooms, a kitchen, a dining room, a living room. Maybe a, right? What if I add a sunroom? So that would, we would consider that motarot, something extra. Right? If then you decide to add a basement, with that's furnished, and okay, so you have another room. That's so what happens when you add additional things into your life? So the way Rav Kook is understanding is that if you are a person who's enjoying this world for the sake of this world, every room you add to your house is another act of indulgence. And you can see this. You can see this out there in the world because people build these gigantic mansions, and in it they have rooms that they never use. They have rooms that are dedicated. They have an art room, and they have a sports complex. There's people who have all kinds of gyms and movie theaters and full basketball courts and swimming pools. Again, not everyone should do what they have to do. But if your goal is just pleasure in this world, then when we would call that, you're four people, you just need 6-7 rooms. Now that you're up to 20 rooms, that's considered indulgence, and it takes away from you. It counts against you. It's considered partaking of the world beyond what you need. But if a person, their focus is on positive, so let's take your example. You went to four bedrooms immediately. Why? Because you said, well, of course you have to invite guests. Right? That's right? So you're already assuming that your house is meant for a positive purpose. You're assuming that you're here to make a better place in the world. You're assuming that your house is a makom, a place of chesed and kindness and welcoming. Says Rav Kook, then every room that you add is marchiv da'ato shel adam, expands your mind. You put in a room that's just an art room where people can do art or hang art on the walls. If you're just trying to be fancy, then that's a negative. But if you're doing it so that people who come to your home can experience something positive, so that you can go into this room and look at the art and feel better, if you're doing it for positive purposes, then it actually allows you to expand and broaden your mind. So that's what he's saying here. He says that this kind of extra flavor that the apple tree would have had, for people who are bad people, It would have meant indulgence, and there's no point to it. But if someone is a tzaddik and is using the pleasures of the fruits to make themselves feel good so that they can live a better life and channeling everything towards the positive, let me read the words again. Kishadam ole b'malot hashlemut, kol amotarot marchivim et da'ato, all the extra stuff which expands your mind, na'im lo ma'od. This is why the Talmud says that having beautiful things, a beautiful house, the other examples, beautiful vessels, even I would say like this, some of you may be surprised by this, but even let's say having a fancy car. Now, there are cars that are useful, and it's good to have all kinds of gadgets in your car. They help you for convenience sake. But then there's things in your car that you just don't need. Why do you have it? It just makes you look fancy. So if you're doing it because you want to show off to everyone and you want to act like you're the best in the world and all of that that comes along with that, then that's considered motarot and that's considered indulgence and it counts against you. But if it's in order to help get you into a good place, and all this extra stuff is in order for you to have an outlet, a way that you can experience some joy in life so that you can make your life better, again, it's all about what you're thinking, then by all means, go for it. Assuming it's within your budget, right? So he says, Aval kishasar miderech hayashar. But when a person deviates from the right path, levakesh raka na chumrit, and your whole life is about pleasure, ro'i lekamot samotarot avuro, then God holds back all the extra. V'zeu chet ha'aretz, that's why the earth sins. Shebekoach kvar ha'yemuchan ha'chet latzet, so because it knew that man was going to sin, what it was saying was, I will not give all my flavor to these human beings who will just use it for pure pleasure and not use it for the good. Alkein nikmetsu amotarot. That's why all this extra flavor was held back. V'alkein gazra Torah gamkein arla b'priya eitz. So therefore, that's the reason, says Rav Kook, why we don't eat the fruits of the first 3 years. Lachsom ta'avat ha-motarot, to help us control desire for extra things. But, says Rav Kook, the earth left one exception. Al-kein ha-palpalim, shetam etzam u-piryam shaveh, but when it comes to pepper, where the trees and the wood and the fruit taste alike, shelo nishar behem roshem michet ha-aretz, the sin of the earth was not in them, Hayamakom lomar, that's why the Talmud thinks, Shepture me'arla, maybe you shouldn't have to wait 3 years. Alken amar, shegam hem chayavim, that's why the Talmud has to make it clear that no, even though these are these elevated fruits that have not been held back their flavor, and they give the full strength of their flavor. And it's really interesting that if you think about it, how powerful the flavor of pepper is, that one sprinkle of pepper can change your entire dish. You can have a soup that's bland, you put in a little bit of pepper, and it will change the dish. If you put in a little bit of apple, you won't even notice it's there. Put in a few sprinkles of, I don't know, eggs, right? It'll do nothing. But pepper, even just a little bit, has a powerful flavor. So he's saying that that's because the pepper did not hold back all of its strength for some reason. So it's an interesting thing then, that if we can imagine that when the trees taste, if all the trees would have tasted like fruit, every fruit would be as powerful in flavor as the pepper is relative to size. Okay, let's go on. So therefore, he says, he's going to explain now, the Talmud says, "Lalam decha she'in Eretz Yisrael chasera klum," that Eretz Yisrael is missing nothing. So here is where Rav Kook becomes, let's see how he says it. Iker hadavar hu lahorot, this teaches you, shehama'ala hashleima she'Yisrael ru'uyim lizchot ba, al yidei Eretz Yisrael, that the, what we are supposed to have through Eretz Yisrael, shiyu b'madrega kazot Eretz Yisrael can elevate us, shlodai shikinyanim shel osher u'motarot lo yaziku lahem, lishleimutam ruchanit ha'amitit, ki im yosifu al yadam ometz b'shleimut, v'derech Hashem ha'yishara. So he says, if you understand that pepper represents this idea of the fruit with its full flavor, and so what the Talmud is trying to teach you, that if the Jewish people, when we are living in Eretz Yisrael, properly, in however he defines the proper living in Eretz Yisrael, we would reach the level, let me read the words again, shalodai, not only, shikinyanim shal osher u'motarot lo yaziku lahem, that even with all the money in the world, we will stay focused on our purpose, lishleimutam ruchanita amitit, to bring us spiritual completion, ki im yosifu al yadam ometz bishleimut, v'derech Hashem ha'yishara, but rather, even having extra stuff, will increase your greatness and bring you closer to God. And what he means is like this. We generally tend to think that poor people have an easier time coming closer to God than rich people. And there's a certain element of truth in that. And the reason why there's a certain element of truth in that is because poor people who have their own challenges, but because they don't have an easy time indulging in this world, everything is expensive and everything comes at a certain cost, so they're not so much focused on how they can indulge in this world. So if you're not lost in the pleasures of this world, it's easy to remain focused on your spiritual self. But if you're overwhelmed and surrounded by partying and whatever you want you can have, as we say, Vayishman Yeshurun Vayivat, we rebel when we have a lot. And you see this in the Torah also. We have examples where there were certain societies that were given. For example, in Sodom. Sodom was described as a place that was beautiful and everything grew there. And today you go there and it's the Yam HaMelech. Right, what happened? The answer was that they became so rich and wealthy and fattened by the fat of the land that they said, oh, our money, if we let guests come here, they will take away. Right? They're missing the whole point that you brought up before. How many bedrooms do you need? Well, here's for the people and here's for the guests. But Sodom didn't think that way. They said, we have all this money and these guests, these passerbys are going to come through, they're going to take it from us. So they became lost in what they have. And sometimes that happens. If a person becomes rich and he has a lot, they get lost in it. But if somebody's spiritually strong, then they can make money, they can have a lot of money, but always remain focused on realizing that it's not about the money. Right? You're not here in this world to collect money or to collect, passport stamps or to collect toys of any kind. You know, children, they collect little toys. Adults collect big toys. But it's still toys. Right? None of it goes with you. What goes with you? What you take in the next world. So does that mean a person shouldn't enjoy this world? No, of course he should. God put into this world a means of pleasure and enjoyment, and we're supposed to partake of them. But we have to be careful they don't take us away, and that's what he's saying. So he says, "Miatov hagashmi, navin el haruchani." So he says, actually, when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, because Eretz Yisrael helps us focus on the spiritual and not the physical, we can then compare the physical to the spiritual. Shekemo shemitzad hamezeg. Now here's where Rav Kook says what he says. You can challenge him. I'm just reading his words. Shemitzad hamezeg haraui hayu makom apalpalim betivam rak be'artzot hakatzavot. He says pepper should not grow in Eretz Yisrael. The proper climate for pepper, the proper earth, the proper setting for pepper is in lands much further away. Kima amaram zichronam levracha, as our sages say, chut hayotze lekush v'zorea bo palpalim. That really, pepper is supposed to grow in Eretz Kush. Eretz Kush, in the simple understanding, is what we refer to today as Ethiopia. Ethiopia has a very different climate than Eretz Yisrael. And the Talmud tells us that that's where pepper grows, in Ethiopia. You know, if you try to plant potatoes in Chicago, they'll grow, but they won't grow like they grow in Idaho. If you try to plant an orange tree in Chicago, I don't know if it'll grow. You have to work very hard. But assuming you can make it grow, it won't taste like the oranges from Florida. Why? Because God set up the world in a way where different foods grow in different places and different locales. If you think about it, it's actually a miracle by itself that you've got all these different places, each one produces, and then we trade. Which is the way that God intended, that human beings should trade. Here, we have all this bread in the United States of America, but, you know, we can't really grow pomegranates as well as they do in Brazil. So we will give Brazil some bread, and Brazil will give us pomegranates, and so on and so forth. Right? You can't plant coffee, the coffee beans won't grow well in the United States, but they will grow well in places further south, right? Colombia is where you get coffee. But there's other places in South America where they grow coffee. Right? That's because different things, and that's why there are places that are hot and there are places that are cold. There are places that are rainy and there are places that are dry. All of this is in order for all of creation to produce different kinds of fruits. Says Rav Kook, we know that pepper should not be growing in Eretz Yisrael. So why is pepper growing in Eretz Yisrael? So he says, Mikal makom ein Eretz Yisrael shi be'emtza ha'yishuv chasera kol tuv. Because Eretz Yisrael is the center of the earth. Now what he's referring to is to a Midrash Tanchuma. The Midrash Tanchuma says that the Evan Shetiyah, which is the rock where upon which the Holy Temple, the Beit HaMikdash, was built, upon which was placed the Aron, during the first temple when we had the Aron, but during the second temple when the Aron was already hidden, we used to put the Kohen Gadol would go into the Kodesh Kadashim and he would place the Ketoret, the offering of Yom Kippur, directly on top of the Evan Shetiyah. That's where the stone was. Today, unfortunately, it's not in our hands, it's in the hands of others. But nevertheless, there's still that rock there. And the Talmud tells us, why is it called Evan Shetiyah? And the Talmud says it's because that's the point from which God created the rest of the planet. That is the Nekuda Rishona, that is the Bereshit of this whole Aretz, was the Evan Shetiyah, and from there expanded the rest of creation. Which means that the Evan Shetiyah contains within it the potential for everything that exists out there on the planet. So the Midrash tells us that there's a chut. A chut means a string, but really it's a vein, an artery, that travels from the Evan Shetiyah all the way to Idaho. And that's where the potatoes grow in Idaho. Or go through all of the different things that grow in different places. And in each case, let's say olives. Olives, apparently Italy has great olives. Right? So what we're saying is...
In Israel you have olives.
Well, that's where we're going to, but yeah. But Italy has great olives. What we're saying is Italy doesn't have its own olives. There is a chut, there's a string, there's a pathway, there's a vein that travels from the Evin Shetiyah all the way to Italy. And if you would plant olive trees anywhere on that path, it would grow the best olives. So in Eretz Yisrael, the place where they get the best olives is because they are the center where all the other places get it from. It is really interesting, if you look at a map of the Eurasian African group of continents, and Eretz Yisrael is pretty much central to that, right? And if you add Pangaea and you put together all of the Americas onto it, Eretz Yisrael is also kind of sort of center. So he says, "Mikol makom ein Eretz Yisrael shi be'emtza yishuv chasera kol tuv afilu mihadvarim haruim liot b'mkomot hakitzoniim." And that's what he's saying. You can plant anything in Eretz Yisrael, because it's the center of the inhabitant of the populated areas of the world. So he says, if that's true of the physical, if it's true of potatoes and oranges and apples and etc., etc., so then he says the same is true of v'chein kol hatov haruchani. The same is true of all the spiritual good. Shekol ha-yidiot va-chachmot sheba-olam. An interesting thing. I wonder if anyone's done a study for which country has the best musicians. I'm sure if I made this a discussion, we could probably have another world war breakout based on this, on which country has the best music or the best musicians. But he's saying that if you would plant musicians along the path, and in Eretz Yisrael, you would have the best music. You would have the best mathematicians. You would have the best astronomers. You would have the best everything. Because Eretz Yisrael, just like it's able to produce the equivalent of what you would find in all the extremes of the world, you would think that in order for us to have, you know, these mangoes and passion fruits, you'd have to go out into the jungle, but no, you can grow them in Eretz Yisrael. So he's saying the same is true. You would think that you would have to be in this kind of climate or that kind of climate in order to have people who are astronomers, to have people who are engineers. But he says, no, that's going to be true in Eretz Yisrael. Afapi, even though, shemitzad mekomom imadaregatan shel hayidiot, sometimes, in order, yeshnan shem ruyot liot etzal amim acherim shemiuchadim lekach. He says there are certain abilities that should belong to the other nations. It's not clear exactly what he's referring to in terms of his examples, but we can create our own examples. He's saying that every science, every discipline. Now, if I wanted to start another fight, you know, I could raise up the issue, you know, for example, martial arts. Martial arts, if you ask people, where do you go for martial arts? They'll tell you the Far East. Right? In China has their version, Korea has their version, the Japanese have their version. Each one, so to speak, that area, based on its culture and the way the people are, it produces people who are skilled in this area. And let me, I understand this could be, you could disagree with this. I'm just explaining the approach that Rav Kook learns. He's not learning that martial arts is in the Far East, because it just so happens that someone in the Far East developed this, and then it spread around the area. He's saying that there's actually an inclination, and there's actually an advantage to those people in that area, because that wisdom comes from that place. And the same should be true other areas where there are warriors, places where there are astronomers and scientists of all kinds. You would think that the best zoologists would come from a country that has more animals. That's just usually the way that it develops. But he's saying, you would have thought that that should be the case. Mikol makom, e efshu shetia Eretz Yisrael chasera klum. He says, if they would go to Eretz Yisrael, they would also find the same ability to thrive in these areas as you can find in the rest of the world. So, once again, before we finish this, I want to clarify a small point, which I think sometimes when people hear this kind of Torah, they say, okay, this feels like, it feels like, it's just another person who's saying, we're the best. That's what it feels like sometimes when you read this. You say, well, you know, all the other countries, they each have one little thing. This country has this, and that country has that. You know, if you want to find the best divers in the world, if you want to find the best gymnasts in the world, you can ask these, or athletes, right? So, you know, long distance runners. So apparently, people who are from the northern parts of Africa are better at long distance running than other people. Right? So Rav Kook seems like he's disagreeing, and he's saying, well, no, they have that, but in Eretz Yisrael you can have just as much. So again, it sounds like it's, but what he's saying is, what he's really saying is, that Eretz Yisrael is the source for those things. He's not just saying, whatever you have, and we have it better. He's understanding that the Eben Shetiyah is the source for all of the resources that exist in this world. Not just Gashmi, such as fruits and vegetables, but Ruchani, spiritual resources. Now, you might have argued, intelligence, what does that have to do with the country you're living in? But he's understanding that intelligence is also related to the climate and to the place where you live. And he's saying, since all of that, the spiritual development, also comes from within Eretz Yisrael, so therefore Eretz Yisrael will have that. Al-Kain nikrat rabati b'de'ot. So he's quoting here, he's citing a midrash in Echa. Sefer Echa was written by Yirmiyahu, mourning the destruction of Yerushalayim. And he begins with, Echa yashvav adad. Echa, how could it be that Yerushalayim is sitting vadad alone? Ha'ir rabati am. The city that was rabati am, great with nation. What does that mean? So the Talmud tells us, really the Midrash tells us, that Rabati b'deot, that it had all this knowledge, all this wisdom from all over the world. It was all centered in Yerushalayim. If you think back, if you recall from the Kohelet class, where we discussed and mentioned that Shlomo HaMelech had all the wisdom in the world, and then from him it kind of spilled out onto the rest of the nations, so that so many of the later philosophical teachings are the ones that are at least accurate, are taken or lifted, if not from Kohelet directly, but from the traditions that source themselves in Kohelet. He's saying that this Midrash teaches us that on a very physical level, but also on a very spiritual level, Eretz Yisrael is the source for all of the world's resources. And therefore, the Talmud comes to tell us, Lamdcha she'ein Eretz Yisrael chasera klum, because it says in the Torah, lo techsar kol ba. And I'll finish with, it's really, really interesting that Eretz Yisrael is like that today. If you would have gone there 100 years ago, you'd have seen almost nothing growing. Maybe 100 years ago, 150 years ago, you'd have seen almost nothing there. And today, mamash, mamash, you can find anything you want growing in Eretz Yisrael. You can't do that in every other country. That's what he's saying. You couldn't do that everywhere. And even if there are other countries that can have a lot, but they couldn't have everything. Rav Kook is suggesting that there's not a single fruit or vegetable. There's not a single resource. There's not a single physical or spiritual resource that you cannot draw and take from Eretz Yisrael. And the reason is because Eretz Yisrael is the center of all of that. Eretz Yisrael is the place where it all comes from. And therefore, Eretz Yisrael, which is the place where we, the Jewish people, can be the best version of the Jewish people, We are entitled there to when we are the best version of ourselves. Obviously, Eretz Yisrael can also bring out the challenges within the Jewish people. But potentially, the Jewish people could only be the greatest in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, that's why Eretz Yisrael has access to all of this pleasure and all of these resources. Because for people who will use it for the good, additional resources only make them a better person. B'zat Hashem, we should be zocha to enjoy some of these great benefits and pleasures that exist in Eretz Yisrael.
Yishar kol.